I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It is Saturday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Baldwin, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Saturday.
It is Saturday. And of course, Dave O'Brien.
Oh, yeah, Saturday. Come on, the Saturdays.
Where are you coming to us from, Dave, today?
I'm currently sitting in sunny Southampton, taking
Higher
the breeze
now.
In.
Higher now, outside of the old London town, eh?
Yeah, I've migrated. So, you know, life is good out here. Went for a lovely walk in the forest this morning. You know, very calm after a very, very busy period.
I forgot forests existed, to be honest. I haven't seen much greenery. We did see a football pitch this morning, though, Lawrence.
They've not been in the top league for a while.
Turf.
Yeah, no, but that's not a forest, is it? Well, I suppose it's a forest to an ant.
How did it go, lads? Score any goals?
I think I scored a hat-trick. I think.
Ooh.
Lawrence, I believe Lawrence nutmegged someone at some point.
Nutmegged a few people.
Scored a nice goal.
Yeah, it was all right. It was all right, wasn't it?
Wasn't too shabby.
Made my return to the six-a-side pitch yesterday after a few months out with injury. And for some reason, my touch was unbelievable. Like, I was ripping balls down. I was doing chipping, but I was, brought one down, put it over some dude's head. I was just, I don't know what was up with me. I was like Francesco Totti. It was unbelievable.
I think that can happen
sometimes. Once you've not, when you've not done it for a while, sometimes your body's just so happy it's playing football again that it sort of has all this it's like a latent memory of stuff that you wanted to do.
It's like riding a bike. Dave, you might have to see this in action next Saturday. You might have to prove.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm back, mate. I'm back. I did let the ball run through my legs, turned quite clean for one goal, and then defender came across, and I came back onto my right foot, did a step over. Then rolled it back, and then the sand carried it, and it looked I looked so stupid. I kind of slipped and fell over. It was dead embarrassing, but we'll forget about that. We'll go just think about the glory.
You shouldn't have mentioned that, but you're talking about the beautiful first touches, all this sort of stuff. We would have been none the wiser, mate.
But it would have been unbelievable, Adam. I was just thinking, if that had come off, God, it would have been an excellent bit of individual brilliance.
Plenty to talk about in today's podcast, guys. Of course, the Euro 2016 final tomorrow afternoon. Also got to talk about France, Germany. Jurgen Klinsmann apparently getting offered the England job. Leonardo Bonucci apparently on the verge of moving to Man City. So much to talk about. Let's start, though, Dave, with France, Germany, the semi-final on Thursday night. Germany, as I predicted, not to sound too big-headed, getting knocked out, Dave. But what went wrong for the Germans?
I think, you know, there were a few things. Firstly, Mario Gomez's injury. I think that, you know, gave Germany that cutting edge. You know, we saw the first game, they were very poor against the Ukraine. Probably one of the worst teams at the tournament. Couldn't break them down. You know, he scored twice, but it was a very, very poor performance. And Germany did very well with Gomez back in the side, giving them that space, opening up space for their attacking midfielders by being that man that was consistently playing on the last man and looking to get in behind. And I feel they really missed that. Thomas Muller's had a very terrible Euros. You know, 26 shots on goal, not scored a single goal yet, and won't score a single goal of him being knocked out. But I just feel it was a little bit too narrow. Leroy Sané, for me, should have started to give him that width on that right-hand side. Again, it kept on going to Kimmich and there was no one there. Mezit obviously does come inside onto his left foot and does come into that space when he plays out wide right in a 4-3-3, and I just feel Sana would have been a better option. That's where you wanted to attack France, is at the fullbacks. So that's probably their weakest part of the team ever, and Bakary Sagna. So I just think that Germany and Joachim Löw got it a bit wrong in the game, but, you know, credit to France. I think France played excellent, you know, very, very well, and since he's moved Griezmann inside, they've looked like a completely different team. So I feel that they'll do very well in the final, but it just felt a bit, for Germany, it was a bit of a you know, a few tactical mistakes, and it kind of cost them the game.
They obviously lack, as Dave said, they lack that world-class forward. Obviously, France have got Antoine Griezmann. Even Giroud can do a job up front. Mario Götze didn't really work out in the first few games in that false nine role. Still waiting for that that Nando's, Dave. Mario Gomez injured, of course, as you say. Thomas Müller having a bit of a shocker. It's a shame, but at the end of the day, Lawrence, France deserved to go through. Germany had too many problems, essentially. It didn't have that goal score.
Yeah. And actually, I think, you know, you're going to recognise that even post-World Cup when they sort of snuck it in the final, if you like. He was saying, you know, history can change very, very quickly based on a couple of key moments. And I think he was saying, you know, the squad felt quite lucky to win that World Cup. And I think, you know, in this tournament, they've, you know, they're clearly one of the favourites, one of the more dominant sides in the way that they play. But also, I do think that when France allowed them to be dominant and almost played the side that, you know, would basically take the pressure, then Germany found that very difficult. And like Dave said, they didn't have the implements when they needed it at the other end. So I think they were outplayed. But I think that's then going to be flipped again come the final, because they aren't playing a side like Germany. They're playing, well, Portugal. And Portugal are quite a bombastic team with quite a lot of physicality in there. I'll be interested to see how they face up, especially in the sort of attacking midfield areas for both sides. Because Dave makes a good point, you know, about Griezmann being so key for France, but at the same time, how loaded you know, Portugal are in that area with Nani, Quaresma. You could even put Ronaldo in that area, and you know, even Sanchez, I think, is quite key to backing up that zone. So it's interesting. We'll see. And not only that, I think especially also looking at the influence of Paul Pogba on a game like that, I think it's going to be really fascinating.
I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a brilliant game, because Portugal have been, they've been like workmanlike, and they've worked very hard in the tournament. They've been pretty decent on the ball. When they've had their spells of domination, they have created chances. So it's because I feel that the France-Germany game was easy for France. They knew what they needed to do. They could counter-attack and sit deep and break. But are they going to have the expectance of a filled Stade de France, that they have to go out there and they have to dominate the ball, which kind of for me would be the wrong way to play against this Portuguese team? You know, Portugal have looked a little bit weak when teams have broken against them. You know, you go back to the Poland game, Poland didn't take their chances at all, but they created a lot in that first 30 minutes that with a better player, like, you know, with a form Antoine Griezmann or a Dimitri Payet, that if they can get those chances, you know, Payet from range or, you know, Griezmann going through, that it could really open up the game for France. But if they go out there and they think that we've got to dominate the ball, it's very dangerous. You know, look at Nani, look at Ronaldo drifting into those wide areas from central positions, causing that, you know, the space between the fullback and the centre-back. That could be very, very dangerous for Portugal in a defensive sense. So, again, it's going to be a fascinating final.
Who's your money on, Dave? Because obviously Portugal have sort of, they've been impressive defensively, really. They've been very resilient, but they've lost their last 10 matches against France, including both meetings in the five-team qualifying group, of course, which Portugal got through. Surely France are the favourites going into this one.
Oh, yeah, definitely think France are the favourites, but it would just be unfashionable for Portugal to win it. I know Lawrence, keep on saying about that. What's the thing where it's like Greece?
In 92, there was Denmark. Greece was 2004. And then there's the lack of fashionability, or maybe the you know, a lot of people thought Portugal, and maybe rightly so, don't think Portugal are a particularly attractive side. And also, maybe they felt they were a little bit lucky at times. But, you know, it's that dominance and the ego side, which I think is very hard to quantify.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, it's going to be, again, a massive battle. It's going to be Griezmann versus William Carvalho. Maybe even it could be smart for Fernando Santos to go with both Danilo and Carvalho in that zone just to cut off the supply to Griezmann. But then again, he's still the thing you've got to worry about with Antoine Griezmann is getting the ball to Olivier Giroud and then him running in behind. You know, tactically, it's been a very interesting development of Antoine Griezmann's career. Real Sociedad, when he started there, he was a left winger, playing left wing. But when he's been brought to attacking midfield, he sort of revolutionised that position. You know, we've seen the likes of Steven Gerrard and maybe Frank Lampard playing that role, attacking midfield, being goal-scoring midfielder. But we've never seen it at such a level of Antoine Griezmann. You know, that scoring rate that is absolutely unbelievable. I think that's it's moved from, you go from Messi, from Ronaldo, you know, the goal-scoring winger that we've seen in the last 4 or 5, 10 years. And now we're seeing a new breed, a goal-scoring attacking midfielder that is the goal-scoring force of a team, which is so tactically interesting that now a target man isn't the goal scorer anymore, not the battering ram, but he's sort of in a way a bit of a playmaker for players like Antoine Griezmann, that hit him the ball and he's got a little touch, and then Griezmann is clean through on goal. So it's again, football always moves. It never stands still. And I think we will see more players that will evolve, that will play the Antoine Griezmann role, that is this sort of second striker goal scoring type player. You know, go back to the great Italian teams, the secondary punter has been there in the past. So maybe it's just football coming around again, and this player evolving and sort of, you know, appearing at this type of football where we do have fast counter-attacking teams that is the tactical trend.
I mean, Dave, do you not feel like the amount of, I don't know, the amount of one-on-ones that he has with the goalkeeper, that's clearly not from a position of being an attacking midfielder. That, you'd say that is a second striker.
Yeah, so, that's what I mean. It is, but then it is it's a hybrid of the role. You know, either if you play attacking midfield, you either come to the ball or you can go away from the ball, like Antoine Griezmann, or you can be a central winger, as they're known, where you drift to the left and you drift to the right and you look to overload the flanks and cross the ball into the box. Mm. It's just another way to play attacking midfield, but it is so interesting, the amount of one-on-ones. But one thing to watch out in the final, if Griezmann does get a one-on-one, look at his start position. Look at his start position before the move, when the move's being played, and it's a lot deeper than a natural striker. Again, we go back to maybe start of the, you know, early 2000s, when we had like players like Inzaghi, players like Crespo, players like Michael Owen, that were playing a poacher role where they were running in behind and the target man was deeper than them. Now it's flipped around where the target man is now leading the line and the attacking midfielder who's making those runs, making those Michael Owen-esque runs and those Inzaghi-esque runs, but from a much deeper position.
That's because just, they're playing higher lines though, isn't it? So is it essentially that allows
him
more space?
It's kind of a different thing, that defenders are, you know, they're more aware to... a forward running in, you know, the introduction of pressing and playing that style brings in the offside trap. And that's the reason why teams are a lot more aware to players like Michael Owen, players to Inzaghi, because teams are drilled better. Tactically, they're a lot better at playing a high line. You know, maybe we've seen in the past where teams have been good at that. In the early 2000s, there'd be the odd team that do that. But now everyone plays a high line and they play it quite well. That's why the attacking midfield role with Antoine Griezmann is so difficult to defend against, because it's the secondary phase when the ball goes to Olivier Giroud. Then, you know, and he's blatantly onside. He's usually playing ahead of the defender. And then it's the second phase that Griezmann goes in, and that is difficult to play the two high lines. It's like the secondary high line that you've got to react to. And then if the flick on comes, you've got to be so aware. You know, you've got to think of, if you're an aggressive centre-back, a John Terry, a Milan Vidic, who's going to attack Olivier Giroud, the other three centre-back, the inner back four, have to tuck in, have to become compact, but also have to be so disciplined in their positioning. And that's what Antoine Griezmann breaks at the moment. It's that ability to defend that second line and be the, you know, play that second high line. And it's difficult. And that's why he's getting joy out of it, because it's so hard to play, you know, in transition and be that agile and be that pacey when we've come to see defenders be more ball players these days. Anyway.
Obviously, quickly becoming the player of the tournament, Griezmann, Dave. You talked about his tactical evolution there. Obviously, gives France an edge. What is your score prediction going into this game? I think it's going to be 3-1 to France.
Wow. Really?
Bold.
This, you know, we've had some really hard games to predict, but this is definitely up there.
Because Ronaldo's in form now, you know.
I'm going to go 2-1 Portugal. Bold.
Lawrence, which side are you coming down on here?
I'm going to go 2-2 into extra time. And I think, you know what, I think them... Do I want Ronaldo to take it in the end?
I've got a feeling he's going to.
I feel like, it feels... That could happen. Obviously, as I said, the form's there. It's that big question mark over both Messi and Ronaldo leading one of these teams to a major international tournament. He's going to be chomping at the bit to win this game. I just feel like France, it feels like it's their tournament.
I mean, I think also France would probably be more popular choices as champion, wouldn't they? Than
of course.
Maybe the other guys. But, you know, Portugal have also been grafting over this for a very long time. You know, France has got this generation now where, you know, it feels quite new because they had to take out a lot of the older generation. Whereas with this Portugal team, it feels like things are, I don't know, there's something almost NBA-esque about it, you know, where a couple of guys get together because they want to get a ring. Is it something similar here with the Nani, Ronaldo, Quaresma? It's their last chance.
So you're saying 2-2 extra time and then...
Either Griezmann or Ronaldo pops up with a winner. And I'm going to go Ronaldo.
Ronaldo.
Yeah, I think it'll be.
He's going to get one over Griezmann again after the Champions League final. Interesting. Guys, do let us know your score predictions at the front three on Twitter. I did just want to have one final word on Germany before we move on from the Euros. Does it feel like an end of an era to you, Lawrence? Because I know we're talking about how Spain, obviously, Del Bosque is gone, and Germany being the world champions, it was a somewhat disappointing campaign. But at the same time, they were missing quite a few players, Marco Reus, Ilkay Gundogan. There's young players coming through like Kimmich. Is it less an end of an era, more simply an end of the campaign itself?
It might be end of an era for Jogi Löw. I feel like we applied the same idea that we did to Spain onto Germany and just didn't allow Germany to sort of write their own. And I think, you know, Spain was somewhat of an aberration in recent years, kind of dominating thing years after years after years. It's quite clear that, you know, the centre of world football is still very much in Europe in terms of the dominant tactic, at least. I think a lot of other continents are tactically revolutionary in other ways for themselves. You know, MLS is very interesting to watch because of what they're bringing up through there. South American football, from what little I do see, but the highlights and some of the really exciting attacking football over there as well at the moment. I don't know if it's end of an era. I think it's a continuation, but I don't think we're trying to look for the same sort of domination that Spain had, and I don't think there are going to be many sides that can do that right now. Because like Dave says, football has been changing, and for that reason, I don't think it allows dominance. Because actually, managers are playing the chart, like they're playing the odds a little bit. I think sometimes when you play those odds, it comes down to very.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, they become much, much slimmer because pressing and all those sort of things, and how the body reacts and how players react, and, you know, how throughout a tournament you don't know how that's going to work. So, no, I don't think it's an end of an era, but I think there's a couple of other people who already thought that era was over after 2014, to be honest.
Let's move on to talk a little bit about Jurgen Klinsmann then. Reports emerging in the last 24 hours or so that he's in discussions with the Football Association over succeeding Roy Hodgson as England manager. This is coming from Oliver Bierhoff, the Germany general manager. He's the one suggesting this. Obviously, the United States coach at the moment, Dave. Does it feel like a good fit to you?
I don't know. It could be a good temporary fix. You know, he's done some pretty decent work with the US national team, but have I been blown away by their style of football? Have I been blown away by his management? No, absolutely not. So I don't know. I think it could be a good fix. You know, I'm all for international managers signing another international manager, someone that's done that before, but it just doesn't blow me away. I don't see Klinsmann playing a very expansive football. It's a very workman-like American team, which in a way could be a good way for some of these players to go, you know, get them running again, get them working hard. But I'd like to see something a bit bigger. I'd like to see a longer term plan from the FA. I'd like to see them just come out. You know, if they are going to go with Klinsmann, why? Why are you going with Klinsmann? What is the future of English football? That's what I want to see. So maybe it'll be a good appointment for, you know, a temporary solution, may bring some togetherness that's obviously not there in the England camp. But I don't know whether it's the right thing.
I don't think as a coach he's the right way for England to go. And I feel like the FA is always... That's the problem, is the FA are clutching it. So I also feel like they don't actually have much of an idea over those sort of things. So I think if Klinsmann came in and tried to change what's already going on, I feel like he'd just be disrupting the way that the FA want to go. frankly, it doesn't look like it's particularly well organised over there anyway, from the outside at least. And I don't know if Klinsmann would change that, because I feel it would be I feel like it would be similar to America in that sense, or the United States, where, you know, there are a few people who pulled away from that idea, or were sort of like, oh, you know, I don't think he's right. I don't think he's going in the right direction. And especially in England, I think as soon as that happens, you lose people, and then from there on, it's just sort of a toxic relationship. I think the FA should be taking their time, and I'm just disappointed already.
the other name in the mix, unbelievably, is Roberto Mancini. He's apparently interested in taking on the role. Harry Redknapp has been ruled out. Mancini's got a year left on his contract at Internazionale. I can't see that one happening. Can we see that, Dave?
It could be quite an interesting one as well. But again, the style of football there would be very defensive. We saw what he did with Manchester City. Did very well with them, but they were they were more defensive than they were an expressive team. So it's just not where I want to see, not where I want to go. Again, like Lauren said, it's a similar type of appointment to Klinsmann. Probably a better appointment than Klinsmann. I like Mancini a little bit more as a manager, but you watch his Inter Milan team this season, it was a little bit boring. So again, I don't know. Not convinced with that at all.
Thank you, but no thank you.
Thank you, but no thank you. Yeah, not a bad thing, but not a good thing.
Should we move on to a little bit of transfer talk, a little bit of transfer banter?
Do you need to ask?
Is that a thing?
Is transfers even a thing anymore?
Mate, believe me, they are a thing.
Just because you click it doesn't mean it's interesting.
They are a thing.
Okay.
I find it interesting in the respect of if they've got some truth to them, seeing how these why teams are spending this amount of money, why they're trying to bring these players in, what they bring to the team. I find that interesting.
Do you ever just feel a bit less like that, you know, when it's pushing the bounds of human creativity?
When they're particularly spurious, yes. You know, the one doing the rounds for Spurs last week was Mauro Icardi to Spurs, which just didn't really make sense for a number of reasons. And it's just sort of hot air. Whereas, for example, I know we talked about it a lot already, but the Paul Pogba stuff is interesting in a way. It feels now like it's going to be the same story for the next few weeks. Yeah, Paul Pogba's on the verge of joining Manchester United. No, it's not actually. Nothing's been discussed yet. All this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is quite funny. It's sort of what people think is possible, isn't it? And I think sometimes people want to push it in a certain direction. And I wonder how sort of media gossip. I wonder if sometimes there's some media gossip and the club reads it, or someone in the club reads it and goes, well, that should be quite good. We should probably do that.
Yeah, if they based it on the spurious transfer, it'd be interesting. Yeah. I find it more interesting, for example, Jordan Ibe, Lawrence.
15 million, yeah.
Liverpool accepted a £15 million bid.
What 15 million got you in 2016?
12 million would have got you to meet Tripoliot just 12 months ago, Lawrence. Thank you, boy.
Jordan Ibe, young, English, promising.
Sad to see him go, though, potentially, or
yeah,
is it, not
is
really.
A big Liverpool
is he not like
is
it?
Well, I mean, Liverpool have got a buyback clause in there, so I'm not. That buyback clause is a little bit promising in that sense. But at the same time, Liverpool, I think, feel like they have Shea Ojo, who a lot of people are saying looks like a different kind of package and much more what maybe Klopp wants. I do also think it's partly that, you know, as affectionate as Klopp was towards him, he doesn't fit the current system right now. And, he was a very effective impact midfielder, but I feel like within Klopp's project there's a lot of honesty to what he's trying to build, and I genuinely think sometimes when someone leaves a club it's not sort of like, oh, you're surplus to requirements, get out. I do think it was kind of along the lines of I think this probably applies to a lot more people than we realise, because, you know, when someone leaves people want to put the boot in, or they want to sort of be like, well, he was shit, I don't want him anyway. But I think with Jordan Ibe it was along the lines of, look, you know, you don't fit into this system right now, and it's a case of timing. If you want to stick around, give it a go. But I also think, you know, you don't want a player in there who's going to be particularly frustrated by the system or doesn't feel like things are going his way. So you might as well be honest and especially sell someone for 15 million. I think that's great.
A good price, Dave.
15 million? Absolutely not. I question the market. It's absolutely mental. Like, you see Barcelona let Denis Suarez go for like 4 million to Villarreal and bought him back for 4 million. That's like, yeah, that's sweet. Yeah, that's good business. So then you see like 50 million for Jordan Ibe is mental. But I suppose that's, you know, you can't with quotes, you know, with money going around for Paul Pogba, £100 million. You know, whatever. You just want to throw money at each other. Just do it. You know, there's apparently Pogba's agent will get 20% of the next deal. So if he goes for 100 million. big, big dollar, right? You know, if it's 120 million euros, that's what, so much cash. Imagine what you'd do with that money. He could start his own football team.
Buy a football team. Would you buy a football team?
Yeah, probably.
He could buy Jordan Ive.
You could buy Jordan Ive.
He could.
Jordan Ive just in his garden doing the lawn. Jordan, the rhododendrons don't look very good today. You can sort them out.
You wouldn't play football with him, you're saying. You'd use him for menial tasks.
Yeah, that's what you'd right. Be like, Jordan, ding, wow. Ding, 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 ding. You'd have a bell. Jordan, I need my coffee.
God, you're a mean man, Dave.
You're a dick.
You're a terrible man.
Yeah.
That you do that to poor Jordan Ibe. Dave, talk to me about Andre Gomes. Now, Juventus, Manchester United interested. Barcelona, though, are leading the race. They've stolen the initiative, and they're going to sign him, apparently, according to Sport in Spain.
I think it'd be a bit of a mistake for his career if he were to go to Barcelona now. I don't think there's... again, the midfield, Busquets, Iniesta, Rakitic, you're not getting ahead of them. You're not going to be in the front three because that's Messi, Suarez and Neymar. So I don't know, it feels like I wouldn't, if I was Andre Gomes, go there. I'd look to go to Juventus. That could be a great move for him. You know, if Pogba goes, go to Juventus. He's a player that's very, very, very impressive, both technically and his work rate. His work rate is probably the best part of his game. And you look and he's got lots of skills. He's a very technically very gifted player. So yeah, he's got the full package for me, a very complete midfielder. But I think Barcelona's just a little bit too early now. Maybe go to another club, then go to Barcelona if you want to go there. But yeah, I'm a massive fan of Andre Gomes. You know, the work they did for whenever I watched Gary Neville's Valencia last season, Andre Gomes was always the player that looked very impressive, leading the press in the final third, very, very aggressive. And again, yeah, technically very, very good.
Graziano Pella set to become the latest player to join the China exodus.
Jesus.
Lawrence, moving to Shandong Luneng, the Chinese Super League club, for £13 million, joining Papi Cisse over there. One hell of a strike force.
Yes. I genuinely don't know how to quantify that because it's literally only the money that we're judging them on. I have no idea what the quality of the league is. I don't understand why any player would be happy to go there. Especially not Pella at this point in his career.
Mental.
Why would you go at this point?
Yeah, it does feel like a wrong move, Dave. Potentially.
Yeah, I think, why not go back to Italy? There's so many, you know, fair enough he's fallen out with someone at Southampton, but a move to Italy would be the natural progression for him, right? You know, Inter Milan could do with a striker. AC Milan could definitely do with a striker of his calibre. Fiorentina, Lazio, obviously, but Lazio don't have a manager at the moment. That was absolutely crazy if you've not seen it. Bielsa being there for 2 days and then resigning. Apparently they couldn't, you know, he came to the club with, the club promised him that there'd be six players that would be joining. He'd pick these six players that fit his system. Apparently he gets there and they've not contacted any of those players. So he just instantly quits. A very Bielsa thing, but very interesting. You know, we spoke to Juan on TFR Live. I think it might have been you and me, Adam, about the next managerial job for Argentina. And he was saying, you know, he'd love Bielsa, but Bielsa told him that he never wanted to go there. I'd love to see Bielsa as Argentina manager. That'd be so much fun. But yeah, very interesting on a side note. Potentially you could go to someone like Genoa if you didn't want to go to a top team, or Sampdoria, but to China for Pella, just crazy.
I mean, moving on from that one, you mentioned Bielsa there, Dave.
Mm.
What's happened with Marco Bielsa, Lazio manager, the new Lazio manager 2 days ago?
It's not hard, Adam. He just said it. They didn't do the transfers and he was disappointed.
That's simply it. Just boom. He's
Bielsa.
2 days, he's had enough.
But if you need to know with Bielsa, if you don't stick with what he said, he's off.
You don't mess
about. Fine, he'll get another job.
I mean, that's the thing, is he probably will get another job. One final word on Pella. I can imagine that if you are a particularly frustrated player, or you're a player that doesn't feel you can break up any further, maybe into a big deal, or you know, like you're going to be able to make, you know, Puma money or Adidas money or Nike money, then maybe it is a good idea to go to China, because you've got a lot of brands over there that are very interested. You can be the face of something. And I imagine, you know, if you want to get out, someone like Pella would probably find it quite straightforward to get back to Europe.
Would you like to know what the shortest managerial reign ever is?
I think it was like 20 minutes or something.
It was 10 minutes.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
Senior for Torquay. Roy Senior had the misfortune of being appointed Torquay manager as the club were being taken over by a local consortium. Papers signed, they wanted their own man, and Roy Senior was gone after just 10 minutes. 600 seconds. There you have it.
Fuck.
Pub fact for you there, guys.
Leroy Rossini.
Leroy Rossini.
The Leroy Rossini.
The Leroy Rossini.
Hey, cool, man. I
cool, man. You do what you do.
Yeah.
Let's end on potentially a spurious transfer rumor, depending on how reliable you think Bild is in Germany. Mm.
Dun, 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 dun.
It's pretty good. It's, you know, it's hit and miss, has to be said. But they are reporting, guys.
Right.
Tottenham Hotspur.
No.
Joined the race.
No.
Even though I thought the race was over.
The human race.
For
whoa.
Mario.
Oh.
Götze.
Ooh.
Tottenham have made contact with Bayern Munich over the possibility of signing the German international. Borussia Dortmund also keen, but their interest has cooled.
Ooh. After his wage demands.
Yes. Now, interesting. I thought this was dead in the water. Liverpool, of course, linked with him earlier in the transfer window. Apparently he had a little chat with Carlo Ancelotti, and Carlo was like, you're staying here, Mario. You're in my plans, you know, you're not going anywhere.
I'm Bild Italian, you're up. Italian. I'm not Italian. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But your name's Mario. Whatever. Staying, see you later. Ciao.
Now, Tottenham are interested, Dave. Is this the first you're hearing of this? There were gasps. Were they sarcastic?
Yeah, it's the first I'm hearing of this, but what Mario Götze would bring to Tottenham would be so good. You know, Mario Götze, when he was at Dortmund, was probably one of my favourite players in world football, but then he moved to Bayern Munich, and I thought that killed it for me. It was like the Carlos Tevez to Manchester City, a team that I really like in Borussia Dortmund, moving to, you know, your arch rivals. I don't like that at all. But what he could bring to Spurs is that ability on the ball and attacking midfield. Firstly, the problem with that is that Dele Alli plays that position for Spurs at the moment and gives them a lot. But what it would do, it would move Spurs on. It'd evolve them even further if they were to play Dele Alli, Eric Dier, sort of central midfield, and then Mario Götze there. What he was so good at doing was, at Dortmund, was combining with Shinji Kagawa. Like, they'd, you know, it'd be Götze in the middle, Kagawa on the left, but they'd switch positions, they'd interchange, they'd combine down that left-hand side. It's just a joy to watch Mario Götze when he is flying, when he is in form. Very, you know, his dribbling style is a little bit Messi-esque, you'd say, and that is a great sort of compliment to him. But, you know, he's been in the wilderness at Bayern Munich. He needs that move, and, you know, it feels like Spurs, Pochettino, similar system to what he played at Dortmund, would make absolute sense.
Mario Götze! Mario Götze!
Mario Götze!
Mario Götze!
Götze!
Cha-cha! You got me excited, Dave, I've got to say. I'm excited now. 20 million, the fee, apparently.
Bargain.
No doubt, as per usual, Chelsea will end up signing him a week from now, after William and Batshuayi. They'll swoop in for that one as well. But guys, that brings an end to the front three for today. Thank you so much for listening. As I said, do get your score predictions in for the Euro 2016 final on Twitter at the front three. Let us know how you think it's going to go. For now, though, Lawrence, a pleasure as always.
Bonjour. Oh, wait, no.
Au revoir.
Yes.
The Euros. Goodbye. Soon to be heading off into the sunset. Dave, pleasure as well.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Guys, enjoy the Euro 2016 final. We'll be back tomorrow to go through it all. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.